Have you noticed these new solar-powered camera and sound surveillance devices that were recently installed around town? If you have, it's hard to find any local information about Flock Safety surveillance products in Troy, New York. So to learn more about Flock surveillance products, we are talking to Chad Marlowe, a senior policy counsel at the ACLU. He co-wrote with one of his colleagues, John Stanley, an article called How to Pump the Brakes on Your Police Department's Use of Flock's Mass Surveillance License Plate Readers. Chad, welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you just start off by describing what Flock is and some of the tools police departments around the country are installing?
There's kind of three layers of answering to that question. So the first layer is the Flock cameras are a form of automatic license plate readers or ALPRs. And what they do is they take a picture of a car's license plate or any vehicle's license plate. They digitize it. So they turn it into something a computer can do something with by saying, here's the number, here's the state. And then they can run it against various databases to see if that vehicle is of any particular interest. Now, Flock's cameras are different in two ways. One, which they tend to lead with, which is less significant, is that they're solar powered, which is, that's great and all. But in the world where we're talking about concerns about surveillance, whether or not they're minimally adding to the greenhouse effect is probably not the biggest issue you're talking about. But where Flock is really different from most other ALPR systems is most ALPR systems are designed to be local, which is to say that, if we're talking about an ALPR system in Troy, then really it is focused in entirely on Troy. It is discovering vehicles in Troy. It is searching against Troy databases. And so it's very limited. And in limiting it in that way, it prevents kind of external harms from coming in. Troy doesn't necessarily want people from California or people from Florida looking at what the cars are doing in Troy. Flock is an integrated nationwide and potentially in the long run, global ALPR system where the data that flows into it can be shared through much broader geographies, and it can also be searched for people from much broader geographies. Now, Flock will say that's not necessary. Not every system has to do this, but when they sign up a place like Troy for Flock ALPRs, they push very, very hard to get you to buy in to that much, much larger sharing because that's what they're pushing as their competitive advantage in the industry, that we have a nationwide database of ALPR data, not just one that's limited to your town. The problem is most towns get excited about Flock because someone else got excited about Flock and they don't really think, is this more than we're looking for? Are we trying to kill a fly using a bazooka?
So, in your article, you say there are three important areas for regulation and negotiation: how long the data is retained, who the data is shared with, and how the data is used by law enforcement. Can you talk a bit more about these areas and why they are so important?
When we're talking about data retention, if you are recording where every car in Troy travels, right? After a period of time, if you retain that data, you can get a fairly intimate look into people's lives. You can start to figure out, what political meetings they regularly go to, what doctor's offices, what religious institutions. You may even start to figure out that that person isn't sleeping at their home every night, even though they're married. So you can develop a very intimate view of someone's lives. What most ALPR systems are supposed to be used for, which is, checking to see if a car was stolen or if it's a subject of an Amber Alert, you really only need to capture the plate, look, run it against your database, and delete it. But unfortunately, it's not an uncommon practice to retain that information and to start to stitch together these intimate pictures of people's lives that I think raises the ick factor for people who care even minimally about their privacy. In terms of data sharing, that's a very critical issue because, again, you know, if the city of Troy decides that it wants to have automatic license plate readers, and, you know, I would caution that, that's not a decision that should be made lightly. Flock is going to say to you, you know, do you want to take your data and throw it into our larger data set? It's great. It's great. It's great. We won't even charge you any more money for it because they're going to make their money on the tail end of using your data. And if you share your data, it allows other people to look at your data. Now, all of a sudden, Troy is collecting its data and we don't really know who is going to be watching it. Could it be someone from the state of Florida law enforcement who's attempting to see if any women from their state are seeking abortion care in Troy or traveling through Troy? That could be someone who's looking. It could be someone from ICE who's looking for undocumented persons who live in Troy. Is that something that Troy wants its ALPR readers being used for? So there's larger kind of questions around that. And where they're going to be deployed is an equally important question as to what purpose for which they're being deployed.
You talk about how to get Flock blocked, but what if you live in places like Troy, New York, where, you know, those of us who claim to pay attention to local government missed that this was coming, and now, you know, there's at least a dozen or so of them. We're discovering more all the time. What policies can people advocate for once they've already been installed?
Yeah. So the first thing I would encourage people to do is check the contract expiration date so you don't miss it next time. But you can actually ask your city council to adopt policies to govern their use of automatic license plate readers that will mitigate some of the damage. So you can say, for example, like if you're going to deploy them, you have to be aware of civil rights and civil liberties considerations in their deployment, and you can't target certain communities over others. You can say you can only use them for amber alerts and stolen vehicles, so you can limit uses. You can limit retention periods. There's really no need to keep this data for, you know, any more than honestly a couple of minutes or hours, unless, of course, you know, it sees something that's involved in a crime, but then that's a different category of consideration. You know, what I would say to most towns is you should really strongly consider not using ALPRs, but if you are, you should only use a localized system, not a nationwide system. Well, they've thrown in with Flock, but you can still adopt a policy that says, we don't participate in any sort of data sharing beyond Troy, and we don't want anyone from outside of Troy looking at our data. So there are things that can be done by the city council, even though the contract has already been signed, to mitigate the damages until the contract comes up again, in which case I would encourage people to really strongly think about whether it's the best use of taxpayer dollars to spend on this sort of technology.
In Troy, we used to have an audio surveillance system designed to track gunfire called ShotSpotter.
Yes.
It was installed in 2009 and then turned off right before 2013. You know, it's written about in our local papers as being expensive. There were 22 acoustic listening devices that covered, quote, high crime areas. How does Flock compare to something like ShotSpotter, and is it going down a road we just were down just a decade ago? Do you know anything about the two companies?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, maybe more than down a road, it's down a rabbit hole, right? So, you know, there's areas in which they seem to have very little commonality, but the commonality they do have is very strong, which is it's about surveillance and it's about the relationship between a government and its people. And the idea that you need to watch people all the time to keep them safe is really not one that is borne out by data analyzing the effects of surveillance. And so surveillance is actually, it's been studied fairly significantly. And I think what comes as a surprise to most people is that surveillance has no effect when it comes to deterring crime, with one exception, which is the use of surveillance cameras in public parking lots has been shown to deter auto thefts. Most police departments who argue for things like Flock and like ShotSpotter say it's to deter crime, reduce crime, and it doesn't do any of those things. And so with ShotSpotter, it's a little bit different. It's, you know, supposedly listening for gunshots. But what we've seen with ShotSpotter is a couple of things. One, it can be manipulated. And has been manipulated, where police will go into a neighborhood and then afterwards it will manipulate the data to suggest that ShotSpotter heard a gunshot and that justified them going in. Now, that's a rare case scenario, but more common is that the quote-unquote shot that's heard could just as well be a car or a truck backfiring. And so what ShotSpotter actually does is it drives more police into communities that are already over-policed. And what people who live in those communities will tell you is there is, while crime absolutely presents a danger in their communities, so does over-policing. It creates, police confrontations with individuals, especially bear in mind with ShotSpotter, they think that person has a gun on them. So the way police act when they're going in to confront someone they think has a weapon on them is understandably a very charged and dangerous situation. Also, they come into a neighborhood, they're more likely to confront people, more likely to arrest them. And so again, if you're thinking about efforts to actually reduce crime, given how much ShotSpotter costs or FLOT costs, there are a lot of other things like bigger investments in education or job programs or community outreach or mental health services that have such a more significant and lasting impact on reducing crime than surveillance technologies do. But what surveillance technologies have going for them is they're flashy, they're sparkly, and police get to brag about installing them. But if you're actually interested in kind of getting on top of an issue rather than just looking like you are, surveillance is often not the best approach.
Chad Marlowe, thank you so much for talking to us today. Is there anything that you want to make sure we covered?
Yeah, so I guess what I would say as a last word is that there may be a valuable lesson in this for the people of Troy that they can get ahead of, which is the FLOC contract was signed without anyone knowing about it. There is actually a program the ACLU runs called Community Control Over Police Surveillance, and people can look it up online. It's communitycontrol.com, but control is spelled like on your keyboard, CTRL. And towns and cities that adopt this, there is a transparent public process cities have to go through before they can acquire and use surveillance technology. And we have cities that have adopted it, from the tiny Yellow Springs, Ohio, which has 5,500 residents, to New York City that has 8.5 million. So, what I would say to the people of Troy is, maybe you should look into adopting a CCOPS law so that next time this comes around, the people of Troy will be informed and be able to participate in the process before, any contracts are signed and any technology is acquired.
Chad Marlowe, a senior policy counsel at the ACLU, thanks for joining us today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thanks so much.